Half Moon Run mit I Can't Figure Out What's Going On. 15 Uhr und 10 Minuten, ihr hört die Morning Show am Nachmittag. Und von der Band sind zwei Männer bei mir im Studio. Heute Abend spielen sie im Heimathafen Neukölln. Und schon jetzt quatschen wir ein bisschen über die neueste LP Sun Leads Me On. Wir sprechen über den Mythos der schwierigen zweiten Platte. Wir finden heraus, wie wichtig es war, Teile der Scheibe in California zu komponieren. Und wir sprechen über Stücke, die nach Ablauf der Studiozeit noch einmal aufgenommen werden mussten. Und außerdem verlosen wir Tickets, die letzten Tickets für das Konzert heute Abend im Heimathafen. Zunächst aber heißt es nochmal Hello and welcome, Conor and Isaac.
Hello.
How are you doing today, boys?
Great. Yeah,
cool. Good. Where are you coming from, actually?
Hamburg.
Oh, wow. You played a show there. How was that?
Great. Also great.
Cool. So touring has been good. Touring the new records been good.
It's been very good, yeah.
After you have toured your first LP for 18 months, mm-hmm. you're on tour now for 5 months already?
Since September or so.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, we have a ways to go.
Yeah, you seem to love touring.
We certainly do it a lot. Yeah,
that sounds good. Mm-hmm. Congratulations on your second LP, Sun Leads Me On, which was released here in October. It's an album that you started to write, as I just said, after having been on the road for ages, for almost 2 years. Mm-hmm. How difficult was getting back into the writing process after such a long time on the road?
Initially, it was kind of difficult.
Yeah.
And then when it started to flow, we were good, you know? Once the kind of the taps turned on, it was great.
Yeah. I've read that, because there's this myth about the difficult second album, right? Yeah. But I really read that this album wasn't as easy to make as the first one was.
I think the truth is we were facing the situation where we knew that it was going to be, you know, difficult to make a second album. It's difficult to make an album no matter what number it is. But at a certain point, I think we decided to just say, who cares what number it is? Who cares if people think it's going to be difficult? Let's just make a record, you know? And so the whole notion of, you know, what it means to make a second record, it was a very conscious decision to forget about that.
Yeah, I think that's the way to go, right?
Yeah.
Because otherwise you can really get stuck into a writer's block or something like that. Thinking of the fact that your first album was selling good and people were liking it and you had all the time of your lives to do the first one and all that stuff that's happening, right?
Totally. Yeah, totally.
But moving to California or having spent a little amount of time in California was an important move as well, all right? Wasn't it?
Yeah, it was just a little road trip, though. It lasted about a month, and we drove down there spontaneously, wrote a couple tunes, did some surfing, and made some meals, and that was it.
Yeah. But that I've read that this was an important little trip to California, so that's where the taps were starting to run, kind of.
Yeah, it was freeing in a way, you know, because it was like, there was so much structure around the whole cycle of the first record that it was then when we finished, it was like, okay, what are we going to do? We have to write the record. And it was like, well, really, we can do whatever we want.
Yeah.
So let's go to California. And so that was kind of just a liberating notion.
Yeah.
You know?
And did you take Jim with you? Jim Ebbis, who produced the record, or is just the band?
No, we were just writing there. When we got back to Montreal after that, he came to produce it, the recording.
We had the first phone call with Jim Ebbis in California.
Okay, so you decided to work with him there, or was that decision made?
Well, that's when we got introduced to him, and so, it seems like it could work over the phone call, and
Oh, cool. And I've read that you really got along with him very well. He felt like a fifth band member or something.
Yeah.
That's what you need from a producer, really.
Yeah.
Could they have to really completely understand the vibe that you're going for.
Yeah.
Which is something that you can talk your head off about what a song is supposed to sound like or what you want it to sound like or something. And if people don't have kind of that aesthetic sense in their mind, there's no amount of explaining that'll get you there.
Yeah.
And so luckily Jim was very versatile in that way. He understands a really wide spectrum of musical styles.
Yeah. And he decided, or you both decided, to record most of the LP live to get that live energy on the record, right?
Yeah.
How important was that for the result of that LP now?
Well, it's crucial because when we're writing the songs, we're in a room together, the four of us, and we're playing live, you know? Mm-hmm. And then to do all that work and all that prep and then to go into the studio and do one at a time, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
You know, that's not what we practice doing.
Yeah.
And often logistics or something, the engineer will tell you some reason why you can't do it live. It's going to be wrong for this reason or that. So for sure, it was really important for us to at least play the the core instruments live together, you know, the drums and the bass and some guitar, and usually Devin's lead vocal.
Because I can really feel that live energy on this on these recordings. The album breathes, it's alive, as one can say, as well.
Sure.
And I really think that has become more and more important over the last few years, when you realize, or when we as a radio station even realized, that when bands were working with the click and when they were recording each instrument individually, it often sounded boring. After
Definitely.
You've listened to it for three or four times, you're like, oh, okay, I know what the song is all about. It's on the click. It's like optimized to the max.
Yeah.
There's no little mistake in there. It's not breathing anymore.
Yeah.
This is the character, though, you know?
Yeah. It's the humanness. You don't want to be listening to a record and thinking, like, do I like this? When you kind of polish things and make them, like, on paper, it's perfect, you know?
Yeah.
You want to taste blood. You want to feel something. It's like anything, you know?
Yeah.
You want the kind of humanity and the struggle, the rough edges. That's all the stuff that you want. That's what's the most important.
Yeah, yeah. There's stuff between the notes that you can hear and between the stuff that you can hear that you can feel.
Yeah.
If you're a professional or not, or just a listener, a lover of music, there's stuff happening, right?
On
Marvin Gaye records.
Sure,
that's not happening.
Absolutely.
On some modern LPs, I guess.
But, and you listen to, you know, a lot of great singers, you can hear them taking deep breaths and stuff. And then I remember in the early days, I was noticing some engineer, like it was a theory of engineering to go through and remove all the breaths.
Yeah.
And it was like, why would I not want to hear the singer's breathing? You know, that's he needs to breathe. And
as long as he's not Darth Vader Then it makes sense, probably. When you're recording a Darth Vader album.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't, because
it's essential to Darth Vader to have that breathing.
Sorry.
I wouldn't know it's Darth Vader if he didn't do that. So,
totally wrong thinking. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah.
Now let's listen to another song, and then we'll talk another bit about the LP and about the way the band started and stuff. And we're going to give away the last tickets for tonight's show.
Great.
Half Moon Run mit Turn Your Love nochmal auf Flux FM. Half Moon Run mit Turn Your Love, 15:20 Minuten. Bei mir im Studio sind immer noch Connor und Isaac aus der Band aus Montreal, Quebec. Wir quatschen noch ein bisschen und dann verlosen wir Tickets für die Show heute Abend im Heimathafen. Sold out show, guys.
Yeah.
Congratulations on
that.
You.
Thank you.
I've read that you did have to re-record some of the songs after your studio time had been used up. What were the reasons for that? Why did you decide to go back into the studio and re-record some of the material?
That's on the first record.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, on the first record
we did that. Mixed up.
On the second record, on Sun Leads Me On, we did it all fairly quickly.
Oh, cool.
The first record took forever. It took 7 months. And we did redo a lot of it. And it was because, well, frankly, we were just getting to know how to record. And it was our first time for all of us in studio. And so the way you think the process is going to go and the way you think that you're going to achieve certain things is just not accurate.
Yeah.
So things came out sounding wrong. And we had basically all of it recorded in one way. And it was just like, what's the point of putting it out if it's not perfectly right?
Yeah.
So we went back into the studio. We went to a different studio and we redid it and redid it and redid it and redid it, and it just dragged on.
Okay.
And it was tedious and honestly very difficult, but it ended up being good. It ended up being something that we were comfortable with, but really you get very confused after that amount of time listening to the same thing over and over. So we went fucking crazy, to be honest.
But it must have been an important experience, especially when you started recording the second album, that you had that experience and you kind of knew how to avoid doing the same thing again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you learn something new every time. Like now having done that, we did the full record looking forward.
Mm-hmm.
Like so for Sun Leads Me On, we did 5 weeks or something of just recording in the album. But I think now it's kind of more like we would like to write a song, write two songs, and then go away for a weekend or 4 days and record them and then come back and keep writing and working and then write some more and then go in the studio for 4 more days and have a kind of a smaller scope of the project, just a few songs at a time, until maybe after a little while you have a full album ready. Because to go for 5 weeks like that, you get fatigued and you lose track of the objective at times. So it's kind of half the struggle is keeping focused on what you think you're trying to do.
Yeah, and what about building your own kind of studio? Because that's a thing that you can basically afford nowadays, to build at least a little studio of your own, so you can go into there whenever you feel like it.
I think
that would be a good idea, right? For Half Moon Run.
Yeah,
yeah, good for demos, but I think when it comes down to it, I think you kind of need to go to a studio also just to switch up the scenery from where you wrote the tunes.
Maybe, and
let somebody else take care of the whole technical side of it so you can be free. But right now, actually, we're just working on getting a new practice space, like really very big. And we're going to put a like a studio kind of thing in there and, you know, exercise equipment and just try to make a like a perfect sanctuary.
Yeah. And when you recorded the first album, you were not only getting to know the studio situation, you were getting to know each other as well, right? Because you found each other via a Craigslist. Ad, and I guess that you've become friends now over the years. Or are you trying to avoid that and try to maintain a professional relationship to each other?
Now, I mean, the relationships inside the band have just become like from friends and business partners and creative partners to just everything. We're the only people that we see all the time, every day. So it's like, it's larger than life in a way. And it's constantly changing the nature of it. But I mean, I keep noticing like it comes back in interviews sometimes, but there's this kind of notion that we don't like each other, or in the early days, we didn't like each other or something. It was all just strictly business. And that was just one interview that the journalist kind of tried to put a twist on it because I think it made a more interesting story. But the truth is we've always got along fine.
I didn't doubt that.
Yeah.
But I really think that there's advantages to forming a band out of people who you know who can play well and who seem to be nice. And then you get to know each other and then you find out that you're becoming friends over the years.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's better to do it that way than to be a bunch of best friends.
Yeah.
And then you go on tour and you realize, oh man, this guy fucks me up when we're on tour.
Yeah.
He's such a great guy when we're at home, but as soon as we're on the bus, he's getting on my nerves.
That's right. Yeah. It's hard to tell a best friend, like, you know, what you're playing is bad, you know?
Yeah.
So you need to, he's your best friend, you don't want to hurt his feelings. Yeah. And you have to draw the line,
So what can we expect from tonight's show? It's going to be a best of both worlds, kind of, right? Best of both albums and a great, powerful live show. Yeah. And we can give away some last tickets that show right now. Sure. Wer heute Abend also hin möchte zu Half Moon Run aus Kanada, der kann mich jetzt schnell anrufen. Die Telefonnummer zum Glück lautet 030-2000-9000. Telephones already ringing. 030-2000-9000, das ist die Nummer zum Glück. Thank you, Connor and Isaac. Say hi to the others.
We'll do.
And we'll meet again pretty soon, I guess.
Great. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.